is a Boardwalk Audio podcast.
I just drink wine.
Welcome to the wine situation.
From Sean's home.
From my house. Hi, guys.
Hi, this is the wine situation where we're like, yo, what's your situation? With
wine. Or like, hey, wine, what's your situation?
Yeah, we have not asked.
What if someone's name is Wine?
Oh my gosh. You know, if I ever have children, looking doubtful.
You're like, this is my baby Grenache.
Yeah, I think Garnacha sounds like a beautiful woman's name.
I do. I think that's Garnacha. Beautiful. That's Ellen Clifford over there. She graduated from the Court of Masters. She's a master.
I'm a certified.
I'm
a master of life.
I'm like thinking ahead for you with that.
I like that. I'm here for it.
But you're a certified sommelier.
A certified sommelier.
And the WSETS, you're in your diploma program.
Yes, yes. And that's Sean Buchholz, the wine whisperer. He's the wine whisperer. He helped open Bar Covell. He worked with Greg Condes. He has passed his intro at the Court Masters.
I have.
He and Wine, their situation is real tight.
Real tight.
Like, I have
super
a hard time.
Tight.
I feel awkward sometimes when I'm around you and a good glass of wine. Like, did not want to interrupt.
Oh, no, not at all. Oh, because the wine and I are having a situation.
We're having a thing.
A whisper. A whisper of sorts.
Yeah, when you're whispering to the wine, that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave the room. Just, you know, let me know when it's okay.
Are we doing a hip sip tip this week?
Let's do a hip sip tip.
What's your hip sip tip?
Tip. I mean, I'm in the spirit section of the diploma, so I'm sipping on some scotch I actually liked. Glenmorangie.
Whoa.
It's from the Highlands. I've discovered that I have a thing for Highlands scotch. It tends to be, or at least the ones I've tried, are not as smoky, which is what I don't like a lot of scotches.
Do you like the peatiness?
Do not like the peatiness.
Yeah, I get that.
So, but I found there's been a couple of Highland ones I like, including Glenmorangie. Someone was nice enough to send me some that was their Nectar d'Or, and it was like aged in Sauterne barrels, or finished in Sauterne barrels, so it's lovely.
Take that.
Yeah. What's your hip sip?
I've been into Cremant from Jura.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it tastes like really good champagne that it's, like, you know.
Is it usually Chardonnay Sauvignon?
Mm-hmm. But Chardonnay, usually.
Nice.
But, yeah, it just tastes, like, delicious. You get, like, that breadiness, and you get really, really dry, rich flavors. And
do you
just
have some at Covell?
Obscure.
I'll have some next time I can.
We've had some, and that's where I had it. But yeah, I think we're out of it right now. But yeah, it's just really delicious. And they do, you know, like obviously rosé too. But
we had a rosé on the show when we had Carl Hess. I remember this.
That's right. Who I saw today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
How's he? Carl's
great.
We've been catching up with, I saw when I went to pick up today's wine, I saw Charlie and Camille.
There we go.
Just, you know, the guests just keep coming around.
They just circle us.
You guys, it's really, once you have interacted with the wine situation, it's hard to stay away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have like a black hole effect where we like draw things. We like bend gravity.
They smell the wine.
They smell the wine and they're just like,
must wine. Come over.
Wine zombies.
Yes.
Do you want an intro or a guest?
Oh, yeah. So
who's our guest?
We're going to Skype him up in a minute, but we will be talking today to Stu, the wine gurus. Stu Noodleman, I believe is his last name. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. We can ask. He hosts his own show called Stu the Wine Guru. He has done all sorts of work in wine, including, like, being a judge at a wine contest, and he does a lot of wine writing. He's all over the place with wine. His situation is wide.
Yeah, his situation is wide. And he's based out of Florida, right?
Yes,
yeah.
He's in Florida, so he was nice enough to, you know, be like, I'll log on it.
He stayed up late so he could drink with us.
Up till 8, I guess that's late in Florida.
So he's going to be drinking a similar wine, but not the exact one.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
But we'll get to
we'll
all that.
We'll get into that.
So, yeah, hang tight. We're going to Skype up our friend.
We'll be right back.
Bye.
Bye.
Aha. There's been many times I've started Skypes and realized that I tend to usually keep a little piece of paper over my camera because they say you should do that, and I'll be like, they'll be like, we can't see you, and it turns out it's that.
This is perhaps the most technological episode we've ever done.
It really is. We've got... But we know you're there, and in theory, we're cheersing back. He tried to cheers us,
yeah.
But we weren't there
cheersing
for it.
Cheersing back at you.
Yeah. Well, anyway, guys, welcome Stu the Wine Guru to our program.
Yeah, welcome, Stu.
What's your wine situation?
You know, I want to tell you this. This is the kind of funniest thing. I talked to a good friend of mine about the idea of being in our 50s, right? And
yeah.
We're kind of old enough to appreciate social media, but I think we're just a tad behind in using it in the way that the millennials and everybody else was in. So here's the scoop. I knew the term live streaming before. I mean, I was very familiar with it. But I said to him as a joke, I said, you know, it sounds like something my urologist would ask me, like a big stream, you know, live stream, you know? Like a live stream. But no, in that direction, Mr. Newman, in that direction,
yeah.
Please.
Please, just put it in a cup, please.
Oh, my
that's
gosh.
Kind of what the whole idea behind that technology is with me. But anyway, I digress.
Cheers.
Well, cheers.
Bing.
Bing. I'm drinking a Dry Creek Vineyard 2015 Old Line Zinfandel. It's drinking really well. It's opened up.
Who makes yours? Because we also have what year do we have?
2015.
We also have a 2015 Dry Creeks, and I don't know if it's
sure.
Old Vines. It does not say if it's Old Vines, but that's okay.
The weird thing is that when you put a label up to the camera, everything's reversed.
It gets all blurry. Well, ours is Mazzocco, and it's yummy.
Yeah, this is really good. I'm a major fan of Zinfandel. So ask away.
Oh, so we did get questions on Instagram if you want to hear them.
Go for it.
Let's see. Hold on. Let me. All right. So this came from Seven Springs Wine. It says, hi, the wine situation. Yes, that's what they said. They said, hi, the wine situation. Hope you're well. We know Stu the Wine Guru well, and he is now selling our wines in Florida. Stu was the first person in the USA to review our very first wine, our 2010 Sauvignon Blanc. My question to him would be, what does he remember about that wine? I was on an online show that Stu used to do and was interviewed by him on the show, so we go back together to 2010 when Seven Springs started producing. My name is Tim. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Tim.
And his wines are sold in the USA under the name Over the Mountain, apparently. And he lives by Stratford-on-Avon, which is a Shakespeare lover. I was like, that's so cool. But what do you remember about his Sauvignon Blanc?
Interesting thing is he said it used to be that I had a podcast. They still have a podcast, Tim. Just want to let you know. then his Sauvignon Blanc actually really, really good in that it kind of rode the border between, let's say, South African and New Zealand. So it kind of had a nice combination of fruit and the grassy on the aromas and grassy, steely kind of aromas that you normally get from Sauvignon Blanc. So it was very, very good. I was really proud to be the first person in the U.S. to have a chance to try it. And, you know, since then they've been really, really successful as a vendor.
Is it British wine? I was confused.
No, here's the scoop. He's from Britain.
Okay.
He actually was in the dry cleaning business and had dry cleaners in, Mayfair in London for years. And then had visited South Africa and fell in love with it so much that he said, okay, you know, I really want to get involved in wine. He was into wine, but, you know, naturally from an enthusiastic wine enthusiast part, and discovered that, you know, he wanted to open up a vineyard there, and the rest is history, and started it 8 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's done really well to the point where now I'm representing it as well.
Oh, sweet.
Wow.
I want to try.
I know. I'd love to try some wine. I love some South Africa wine.
He's got
Sauv,
he's got Pinot, he's got Syrah, he's got, I think he just came out with
the
Rosé. Yeah, so they've really expanded in 8 years.
Don't think I've ever had South African Rosé.
Sparkling?
Sparkling, yes.
Yeah, you've had sparkling South African Rosé.
Yeah.
Because
mm-hmm.
the effervescence fest.
Yeah.
A friend had some.
Don't think I tasted any flat. No, they didn't have any flat wine there. Or still wine, I should say, not flat. Flat would be if the effervescence went out of the bubbly.
How long have you worked in wine for, Stu?
Yeah, tell us your origin story.
Yeah, what's your origin story?
Okay, well, I will give you the origin story in a nutshell. I was in the music business for many, many years. I used to work for Warner Brothers Publications.
Okay.
And knew a little bit about wine, but really my experience was more like Bartles and James. I don't know if you guys are old enough to remember that.
What's Bartles? That sounds familiar.
Wine coolers?
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, just like head down to the beach with a six pack of wine coolers, you know?
Man, I grew up different. I didn't grow up by a beach. Damn it. All we had was the muddy, muddy Mississippi.
Yeah.
You don't want to get in that.
You didn't have to grow up by a beach in order to have them. I mean, they were just like really popular in like the early to mid 80s.
Yeah.
Oh. I definitely wasn't drinking in the early to mid 80s. That would have been, I'd be a real hip toddler there.
Okay, so to get forward.
So you were into Bartles and James? Sorry.
Yeah, that was my
got sidetracked.
I'm in San Francisco. I just really inked a deal for a very large deal for our publishing company. And I was out with a client, and I took him out to lunch. About 12 people, and I'm like, the steaks, whatever you guys want to order.
What kind of music were you repping?
What's that?
What kind of music were you repping at the time?
Oh, no. So we were one of the largest music publishers, basically, in the world. Like, so if...
So you had a variety.
Who's your favorite music act?
Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
Trent Reznor.
So Nine Inch Nails came out. When Nine Inch Nails came out with their album, we would publish it for guitar, drums, bass, flute, whatever instrument that anyone wanted to play for Nine Inch Nails. So that was our job. And then what I would do is sell it.
Okay.
So music books and sheet music to music retailers and all the types of music accounts, nationwide. So I had accounts in California, was out in California, had just, like I said, just inked this deal. It was great. Came people out for lunch, and they got the steak, and they said, "Look, we'll order the wine." I said, "Yeah, great, because I don't really know much about it at all." And they said, "Okay, so the cab's come," and they put this cab down on the table, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, "Okay, doesn't look like a wine cooler, but I'll give it a shot." and take a sip, and I'm completely transfixed. I'm like, "Okay, what is this? This is nothing like I've ever tasted." And everybody knows Charlie Brown's teacher. Everybody started talking like I wasn't like listening to them. I was just like, okay, I gotta find out what this is. And in my mind, I'm going, okay, like, get on the plane. I'm going to the airport. I'm going to go find some books. I'm going to get some Wine Spectator magazine. I'm doing whatever I can to get my hands on because this is really interesting. I've never tasted anything like it. That's what I did. Got back and just dove into reading everything I could. Jesse Robinson, Kevin Thraley, everybody I could read. And that's kind of what started it. And I knew that the music industry was going to change because of the internet.
Yeah.
And when the internet happened, everybody started printing out music, so they didn't really need to buy it from me, particularly. So I saw them writing on the wall and said, geez, what can I do? I'm a good salesperson. I love wine. Let me sell wine.
Yeah.
So that's literally what I did. I started with working in a retail shop chain here in Florida. And worked my way through that. My last job there was the regional sales manager for the company. And then left that into distribution, and that's where I am now.
Did you feel that you just weren't exposed to a lot of wine in Florida, or did you just not have any sort of knowledge of it until that meal?
I would probably go. I really didn't have the exposure from very young. I joke when I was, I'm Jewish, so. When I was in Temple, when I was a kid, they used to have manischewitz in the back on a table with sponge cake. And, a bunch of us at 10 all decided, hey, let's go back there and see what we can, how many we can quickly drink. And I think I drank about six, got sick, got really busy, and was like, okay, that's it for wine. Okay, we'll be visiting that.
If it was manischewitz, it was probably the sugar.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what it was. It hit my system, my 10-year-old, 70-pound, 60-pound system.
Yeah.
Actually. And that was it. But yeah, I didn't have the exposure. I was more like a beer and maybe like a mixed drink kind of guy all the way through college and all that kind of stuff. So really, in essence, wine was not was not even on my radar.
So do you feel like you're, part of your job is, you know, educating people and exposing people to all the different styles and countries and
absolutely
the great things about one.
To me, it is all about the education.
Yeah.
That's why what I think the impetus behind doing a podcast like yourself was, you know, I saw Gary Vaynerchuk 10 years ago, and I said, okay, so I'm a New Yorker, he's a New Jersey guy, and, you know, very in your face, and that was his
I can't,
right.
I shouldn't say this, I can't stand I can't watch him.
People either love him or hate him, but I mean, gotta give him credit.
He works hard and reaches a lot of people.
Who is he for everyone out there who might not know?
You're asking me.
Or whoever, yeah. Sue?
Yeah, Gary Vaynerchuk, I mean, he started, his father started, they were refugees from Russia, and he started Wine Library. His father opened up a wine library in New Jersey, and he, as a kid, kind of worked in it in the back, you know, whatever he could do at 10 or 12. But the story goes that he was a good salesperson. He had sold, you know, baseball cards and all that stuff, and had gone to conventions and made tens of thousands of dollars on it. So he knew how to be a salesperson. And he obviously couldn't sell wine at 12, 13, 14, 15. But what he did was he'd always heard that people were saying, hey, you know, it's got that earthy tone to it. Or so he'd go out and he would, you know, literally like eat dirt, or he'd eat mushrooms, or he'd eat whatever it is that they would, the descriptors. And he would learn how to his palate, he'd train his palate that way, so that when he could drink wine, you know, he knew exactly what somebody tasted like. Anyway, then you skip forward and he did a show from the back of, or in the stock room of Wine Library. And the rest is history. And, you know, he's very loud and very in your face, very much like a New Jerseyan. Telling you everything passionately.
I just really like, the first time I discovered him, my friend was like, oh, this guy has a YouTube wine show. So I started watching from, like, the beginning. And I don't know, I made it through a fair amount of videos. But he made all these predictions. Like, he's like, mark my words, in 2 years, everything will be screw cap. And I was just sitting there laughing because it was, he made a lot of predictions that he's like, mark my words, this is the way it is. And I love his confidence, but I was like, you're wrong. Okay, sorry. I will stop hating on Gary Vaynerchuk. I'm going to ruin myself if I do this. I mean, I give him a lot of credit. Like, he knew how to do what he does.
Well, I'll tell you this. You know, as Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee, that's the way my approach was to his approach. So his approach was in your face, loud, you know, kind of quick, asking questions of his guests, almost talking over them, like almost not waiting for the answer.
Yeah.
It was just the opposite.
And you're Bruce Lee.
Yeah. I wanted to be slow. I wanted to, you know, take time with people, ask questions that nobody would ask them.
Yeah.
That was the idea behind my podcast. So really the whole podcast came out of seeing Gary Vaynerchuk and going, I can do that.
And be better.
I'm going to do a podcast as opposed to, you know, video. And I'm going to be the yang that is yin. I'm just going to be totally different.
I like it.
And,
love it.
Yeah, and that was it 9 years ago. And 135 podcasts hours later, I've had on, you know, some of the really well-known people in the industry. I've been lucky enough, I should say. I've had some celebrities who were tied to wine. I've had some sports industry people who've been tied to wine.
I was jealous of your Opus One recording. I'm like, well, that's a nice wine to sip with someone on Skype.
Sure, absolutely. Michael Flaschi, that was actually the second time. He's been on twice. I've been, again, very fortunate, I have to say, in doing a podcast where I've had the ability to have on people who are willing to come on. And the bottom line is this. When I worked in retail, I was always like the go-getter, and I wanted to win contests, any contest I could win. And there was a contest that sent the winner out to Napa. And I'd never been to Napa before. And I said, okay, I'm winning that. Just said it, put it out there, told everybody in the chain. I was, you know, I only worked for the company like a year. And I said, they were like, oh, that's nice, that's good to do. Okay. Yeah,
that's
right.
Cute.
And I was like, okay, don't hate when I win it. And I won it. And they did. they send me out to and I stayed at Whitehall Lane. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them, but they're really a great winemaker. Vendor off of the Insane Lane of Polina. Right off the main drag. In staying there, I had met the winemakers. And the other thing was, when we went on tours, when you took a tour, most people would go through a tour and then they dump you off into the, you know, the store or the shop where you can buy stuff, right? And my thought was, okay, I don't want to be the guy that's constantly asking, like, raising my hand, let me ask a question. Oh, wait, let me ask you a question. I looked at that guy as, that guy's annoying, okay? So I shut him up. It wouldn't be a guy, you know? So what I did was, I would wait till the end of the tour, and then I'd go to the person who gave it or management, and I said, is the winemaker around? And they'd say, well, yeah, why? They can say, wait, just talk to him or her for a second. Yeah, let's find out. I don't think there should be a problem. And winemakers, the amazing thing is they want to talk about wine. They want to talk about making it and, you know, being out in the harvest and all that. So I literally would take those winemakers back out into the vineyard and I'd ask, so why did you do irrigation like this? Why is this trestle system, you know, like trellis system this way? Why is this like that? And they would answer and they'd love it. And when I got back and decided to do the podcast, I said, well, I can qualify all these people. I mean, I'm sure they'd want to come on and talk about it, just like they talked to me, you know, at the vineyard.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I made a business to talk to them the same way. In other words, it wasn't, okay, I know it's your voice, so I think I'm going to ask you some questions for the podcast. And we're live right now, I just want to let you know. And it's like, hey, so you know the conversation we're having right now? You and the three of us? This is exactly how I would do my podcast. Hey, just out of curiosity, you know, like, what made you think of bringing Cab instead of Cab Franc? Or why did you put Cab Franc instead of, you know, Pinot Noir? That was basically it, and it took off from there. And everybody, and people wanted to be on the show. I was lucky, very lucky.
Do you feel like with all you've learned talking to so many winemakers, do you feel like you ever want to make your own?
Wow, that's the first time anybody's ever asked me that question. I appreciate that question. Truthfully, you know, what I really want to do, I just really want to go out and I want to be part of a harvest. I want to pick grapes. I don't feel I have the knowledge to, you know, blend wine or make it. I mean, I understand the process behind doing it, but...
You could always hire your own winemaker and just sort of be the ogre, you know, work with them to blend the wine you like.
But the reality of it is that, you know, I don't have any enological or viticultural background. I mean, I know, and I've learned, and I've read, but someone told me something a long time ago that I really appreciated, and a lot of people have echoed this. Some sommeliers and master sommeliers have said, you know, the amazing thing is the journey getting to that point to become a master sommelier or to become, you know, a high-level sommelier. The problem is once you get there, when you drink wine and when you taste wine, you taste it with a whole different mindset. You're now immediately tasting it for faults. You're tasting it for, you know, like what is not in the wine, what's wrong with the wine, as opposed to what's right about it. I'm not saying that all the time. I'm not saying every master sommelier, every sommelier, high-level sommelier, but a lot of times when they taste it, it's like, I wonder what they could have done with this. You know, it's like, it's here. It's at this level, but it could be.
Do you think that's been your experience when you've interacted with master sommeliers?
Some. Not all. No, I mean, just some. Having said that, I thought it was kind of interesting. I'm not saying that it would dissuade me from learning. And that is something that I'm going to continue to do and try to further my education in wine. But I found it very fascinating that people doing that, which was really weird. It was like they were going, you know, I see where the winemaker went with this. You know, they would have, I mean, you're not a winemaker, but you know, you have your opinion.
What's the closest wine region to where you're at? Virginia?
Yeah. South Florida actually has vineyards.
Really?
If you know, there are vineyards probably in every state.
There are. Even in Alaska, I think they have a couple.
How is Florida, Floridian wine?
Not quite.
Pregnant pause.
That's okay. What are they growing?
Yeah, what are they growing?
There's a lot of fruit. You know, they do like things with coconut.
Oh.
Yeah.
Avocado, blueberry, you know, what's indigenous to what they grow.
Yeah, tropical.
So I'm not super impressed with it. It would be something I'd go, probably, hey, you know. But, you know, I think it's a good effort.
Yeah.
Do you have a, if someone were like, you have to pick a favorite wine region, what would you go with?
Well, I'll tell you, it evolves and changes with me, always. So if you're asking me now, probably one of my favorite grape varietals that I've been drinking and tasting from different regions is Cap Rock. And one thing that I've noticed, this is my assessment, that French, naturally, I would go back to history, say, are the ones that first kind of grew it and produced it, got it right. I think their taste, their style of Cap Rock seems to be something that everybody else that I taste would aspire to, but they change it a little bit to make it their own. So California does it a little heavier. They're more heavy-handed with the fruit.
I mean, that might just be our climate.
Yeah, and it's also like California. I think California's tough to talk about in all one. I think California's too tough to talk about in all one generalization because Temecula is very different than the Sierra foothills, or so is Napa, or so is Russian River. You know, like it's.
Yeah.
We're kind of a gigantic state.
Yeah. But I see
what
you mean.
Saying,
yeah, I get what
yeah.
you're saying. But yeah.
I am a Francophile, so.
Yeah. No, but like Cabernet Franc from the Sierra Foothills is actually delicious, I think. It's super light and minerally, but they don't get quite that earthiness you get.
I have to say, I don't go for the green peppery kind of things so much, so I've actually I've liked more, oddly enough, because normally I tend to lean towards being a French wine lover, I've had more Cabernet Francs I've liked from the U.S. than Chinon.
Oh.
I feel guilty about this.
What about Bourgogne?
You know, I don't know that I've had a lot of Bourgogne.
Oh, it's delicious.
I need to get into Bourgogne.
get into some Bourgogne.
Yes, you do.
And I like it when it's in Bordeaux blends.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry, what?
I didn't want to make it sound like, oh, you know, California aspires to taste.
No, no, no.
No, but France is the original.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify. I mean, like, because California is such a giant state and has so many different climates. No, I said California is just such a big state and has so many, you know, different climates that are, you know.
So would you pick the Loire as sort of a spiritual wine home for yourself?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I tend
Or that's what you're into right now.
Yeah, you know, I lean more towards Loire, I lean more towards Burgundian, I mean, and Pinot Noir.
Mm.
As far as, if I had a universal wine that I like, I would have to say it would be Pinot Noir, and I think it has so many expressions.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have another Instagrammer question. Actually, they have two for us, if we want to do that.
Sure, good.
So, Bexter319 had two questions, one which I assume is for you two, and one which I assume is for me. The first question is, boxers or briefs? I've seen Sean folding laundry before, but I'll let you guys answer that.
Sean?
Mostly briefs, but I do have a fair share of, I do have a couple pairs of boxers, but mostly briefs.
She didn't give the option of boxer briefs, which, I
Ooh,
mean,
no.
I'll throw that out there as an option.
I also have those.
That would be me. I call them Broxers.
Broxers. Sort of like a macho way of, like, Broxers.
Sup, bra?
It sounds better than, you know, boxer briefs.
Broxers for rock stars. Okay.
That was going to work through some puns.
Yeah, so that was her question for the guys. The question that I'm assuming for me says, all-time greatest Cardinals player, which I'm like, Ozzie Smith, duh, the Wizard.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, when I was little, I had a crush on Tommy Herr, I think was his name, but yeah, Ozzie Smith, greatest Cardinal, in my opinion. Him and his backflip across the field. You guys probably don't have a favorite Cardinal because you're not St. Louisans, but
no.
That's why I was like, I'm assuming she knows she's asking the St. Louisan that.
Okay.
But you guys can name from, if you have a team, you could name your favorite player from, do you have a team?
I did. I was like a Met fan deadly enough.
Oh, so you hate me.
Years back, like Rusty Staub and, you know, guys like that. You know, I'm talking like way back.
Yeah.
Before you were born.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, but truthfully, I don't, you know, I'm now in Florida and, you know, I've watched the Marlins come about. Fair weather, I should say.
Gotcha.
I'm admitting that.
I'm not a huge baseball fan.
Yeah, I didn't
I
think
feel
you
like
were.
Anything I would say here would just be.
I'm the only. The only baseball nut around. So anyway, Bexter 319. That's your answer.
There you go,
Ozzie.
Bexter.
Ozzie Smith for the win. You would. I mean, I'd see him when I was little, and he'd always come out and do his backflip across the field. It was a cool thing. Yeah, he was a cool player. See, Sean, did you have more? So I'm curious what it's like to be a wine judge besides sitting beside Master Songs who are looking for flaws.
So, but, you know, I want to go out on the record and say the Master Songs that I sat with, and there's only a couple I can say, were not really doing that. It wasn't really them that I heard it from.
Mm.
So, you know, I want to put that on the record now. I really enjoy doing the American Fine Wine Competition. It's actually coming up in January. They do it every year around Martin Luther King's birthday. It's 2 days. We get together at FIU, Florida International University, and we sample probably between 700 and 800 wines over the course of 2 days.
Oof.
You know, almost every varietal, everything from, you know, you can think of. That's made in the U.S., which is basically everything. And I have to say, to me, every year it gets better. I find that it's interesting that wines from, you know, Florida, not from, but Ohio, Michigan, Pennsylvania, New York, there are some incredible wines that are coming out. And of course, you know, we get the ones in California, Oregon, and so on. But there are a lot of regions that are really starting, and I see come up and come. Virginia, definitely. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to try any Virginia wines, but
they're doing good things with Viognier.
Yeah, I would like. Yeah, we feel like we tried one, or I tried one at one point recently, but it's rare. I would love to try more
good.
Of their stuff. Yeah.
Do you get more
yeah.
of them down in Florida? You're closer.
No, no. Actually, you know, we really don't get the wines. It's you know, Virginia. I don't think ships down here. Don't really buy them, you know, you don't really find them as much, I should say. But you will find, let's say, New York wines, things like that. Just trying to think. Yeah, I just was pretty impressed by the concept behind that there are that many really, really good wines coming from areas that one might not think would be, you know.
Yeah.
How many different categories do you guys have when you rate the wines, like in terms of like prizes to be won?
Well, you have everything from, so I'll give you examples, so they'll do Chards, and they'll do Sauv, and they'll do Rieslings, and they'll do Pinot Gris, you know, and other whites, they'll do Bordeaux's, and then I'm really making it a very small list for you. It's much, much more expanded than that, and they will, you know, have everything red from Bordeaux, Pinot, Cab Franc, Syrah, Petit Syrah. So they do kind of break it out a little bit as well, in addition to keeping it, you know, the main varietals and other reds. So the other reds could be, you know, a variety of different things that you're tasting. What you do know when you do that, I mean, I just give you a little bit. What we do know is not completely blindly tasting it. Actually, we do know, you know, region where it comes from and general price range, and, you know, and a varietal, like, okay, you're old females. But for the most part, we don't know anything as to who they, obviously who they are.
Right.
And what I found is, ones that you would think, there are many wines that are in the, let's say, $25 to $50 range that were really impressive, extremely impressive in comparison to some of the ones that you know, kind of expect to be really good between 100 and 150.
Oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So I'm finding that, I've always said this, there are amazing wines in every price point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Out there. You just have to look for it.
I agree.
I always tell people, you know, the amazing thing about wine is that there's so many varietals out there that you could literally go your whole life, taste wine every night, every day, whatever it may be, and never taste the same two wines twice.
Yeah.
There's enough out there that you could go that amount of time. So, you know, as real estate is location, 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 wine is taste, taste, taste. That's really it, you know, in a nutshell. That's my story. I'm sticking to it.
No, I agree. The more you taste, the more you know.
Exactly.
Or sometimes the more you taste, the more you're like, I don't know anything.
What?
More like that. The more I find, the more I think I know, the less I really do. But that spurs me on to want to learn more.
Oh, yeah. That's what I have been discovering in the last year or so. Do you do independent study, or have you been doing one of the programs of study, or how do you pursue learning more?
I have started, I should say. This is an exclusive for you guys.
Oh. Ooh,
yeah.
Ooh. Beep, 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 beep. Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Like a crawl at the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Alert, alert, alert! Breaking news from Stu!
Right. I just started the WSET
Oh, great.
Level 2 program.
Yeah.
Nice.
Get into it.
Certification, and then I'll move forward to like level 3. I don't know if I necessarily want to be an educator or go for the whole diploma, the diploma program. I don't know. I mean, you know, we'll see.
I just started the diploma. It's a commitment.
Yes.
But they really do, I think they really do give you a wide amount of knowledge that, and they're definitely, the more they teach you, the more they sort of zoom in, and the more you're like, wow, I don't know anything, so I endorse their programs.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, I'm back. I just came back live.
Oh, okay. Yay. Hi,
hey,
live.
Yeah, so the scoop that was given, you guys probably didn't hear it because I ended the live video because you didn't see me.
Well, they have to subscribe to the Wine Situation then, so when we air your episode, then they'll get the exclusive.
Exactly.
Keep it exclusive.
So
we won't tell you guys.
Should I give that information out? Should I give that information together, or should I just tell people, you'll have to watch, you'll have to listen?
Yeah. No, Stu just told us how he started studying wine, and you have to subscribe to The Wine Situation to find out.
Thank you. That's the...
And subscribe to Stu if you don't already.
Exactly.
Get it all.
But I'm taking it you guys are still part of the millennial age range.
Barely.
Barely.
But you are.
We're elder millennials, as they call it.
Okay, even if you're on the tail end of it, you're still a millennial, correct?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we're in the age range, yeah.
I'm not angling to find out how old
I'll take that.
The reason why I'm saying it is this. The amazing thing I'm finding with millennials is that they're so interested in new wines and finding out about regions and so forth. And the reason why I'm saying that is, in comparison to the baby boomers and older,
yeah,
they tend to be very stated old world and very, you know, set in their ways.
Living in Bordeaux and Napa? Not technically living, but drinking a lot of.
Whereas, you know, a lot of the millennials I meet are like, wow, okay, what is this? What am I drinking? You know? And I find it to be a really cool thing. I also think that the whole marketing programs and the whole marketing industry has changed because of the millennials, because of having a phone, being able to just go do this, what we're doing right now, which is, okay, I just tasted the Dry Creek 2015, and it's awesome, right? And a millennial goes on their Instagram page or Snapchat or wherever, Twitter, and says, you guys have tried this, they've got, I think, you know, a couple thousand followers. The potential for that is mind-blowing. And you could do that as a winemaker years and years ago prior to, you know, Twitter being available and everything else being available. You couldn't do that. So you immediately get a response. You immediately get a good, better, different as far as your wine goes. And if you cater to the millennial, your chances of staying on the shelf, let's say in a retail situation, shelf life is a lot longer because of that, because you've taken the time to cater to them. So it's just something that I've noticed, and I think it's pretty amazing. I think this whole medium that we're talking about, the things that we're doing right now, I've always marveled at it, even over the past 9 years that I had done the podcast. I thought, to me, it's just, how is this possible? How is it possible that I would have somebody from China who would, you know, email or get into a chat room? It's how many hours different?
Yeah, it's crazy.
There. But they would get on, and they would ask a question, let's say, of Michael Scalacci, or they'd ask a question of a Maggie Enriquez of Krug. And they'd say, oh, you know, I tried Krug in Russia, or I tried it here, and it was really amazing, and this is the question I want to ask. And you go, wait a minute, you're in Israel.
Yeah.
And it's about hours different. What are you talking about? What are you doing?
I have a few people I talk to over in England, oddly enough, and we'll have long Instagram conversations with each other. I'm like, this is amazing.
This is crazy.
Right, isn't it? I'm humbled by it.
Yeah.
What I'm saying to everyone out there, I am humbled by the whole technological advancement that people are doing.
Yeah.
You know? So, anyway.
No, I think that's really interesting. I think that's interesting about the millennials. And I do feel that the millennial generation is much more interested in wine, and they're interested to try different varietals and try different styles and stuff. My only, like, drawback to that is that millennials and all that stuff can change their taste really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is with wine is that it takes years for it to finally get to market, and there's no way to speed that up. So if you have a flippant sort of millennial that's like, now they don't like this wine anymore, it's too bad, because now we have cases of it that we made a year ago when everyone loved it. So, and I see it a little bit in terms of, like, natural winemaking, and, like, that's really, like, what's going to be interesting to see what happens in that regard, is that if the whole industry runs towards this slightly flawed, unfiltered, unfined, you know, skin contact white wine, all this stuff, in 2 years, how long will it be popular? So there's going to be a ton of it in probably 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And maybe the taste won't be there for it, or the market won't be there, the supply, because then they'll be on to something else. Be like, oh my God, you know what's actually really good is Cabernet Franc from Loire Valley.
Yeah.
Just, you know, like in that same way. So I agree with you. I think any interest in wine is great. And I love that people will go to the local wine shop and they'll talk to their, you know, the purveyor of the store and get, you know, feedback about what they should try, and they're more adventurous to try different things. That's super great. I just want to make, like, bridge the gap between the tradition of wine also with, like, the newness of it.
Well, I'll tell you this. Here's a thought. If you go 10 years back, there was a thing called the sideways.
Yeah. Oh, we've talked about that.
Exactly. That's a great example.
Everybody drink Merlot. Come on.
Yeah.
It's been debated.
Totally.
It's been talked about. It's been, you know,
totally
talked over, inspected over a microscope. The truth of the matter is that, you know, people watched that movie, and it was really, I mean, you have to think about it, they bridged the gap between wine and the people in the know.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Had the knowledge about it, and the average person, and they took a story.
Yeah.
And mine basically was pretty much in the forefront, if you think about it. It was a third actor in the movie. You know, it was Paul Giamatti. I can't remember the name of the other actor in it.
Thomas Hayden Church.
Yeah, and it was, right, and it was
Don't
wine.
Forget Sandra Oh.
Yeah.
And Virginia Madsen. Okay, we got it.
Okay. Sorry, girl, but yes, the
LA represent.
Okay, yeah, no, the two white men were the stars, though. Sorry, feminist high horse. Go on. Ignore me.
The women were, actually, it was all about men. That movie's about terrible men.
Those men
are awful.
They're filthy.
Watch that movie again. Those guys are awful.
They are.
They're terrible people. He's cheating on his fucking wife.
I know, it's the worst.
The whole movie's about him
and
going
his best
to, like,
friends facilitating
fuck
him.
Around. Yeah, they're all like, yeah, let's fuck around in wine country.
If anything, as a female, you should watch that movie and be like, I'm going to drink the shit out of some Merlot. Anyway, but yes, people have, yeah, that movie had, it had
anyway,
an effect.
Had a huge effect.
I think we took the wrong turn.
Sorry. I'm really good at steering things away from where we're supposed to go.
I agree with you.
We're gonna blow it up, blow aside here.
Yeah, you killed it. Was that the effect of that was the vineyards that had Merlot wrecked out the Merlot and started planting new wine. Okay? So it was a direct effect.
Yeah.
And it did for 3 years for a while. And people, I think, and the strange thing is, as fickle as, let's say, the millennial is in tasting different wines, it's that effect, but very quick in the sense that, you know, it took years for Merlot to come back, where Merlot is, you know, is back at this point. People love Merlot, California Merlot, every type of Merlot, you know, from France as well.
I feel like it still gets a glance askance from a lot of people, though. Like, I don't know if its reputation has totally come back.
Or just that people know to order Pinot Noir.
Right.
They feel like if presented with the Merlot or a Pinot Noir, people would probably pick the Pinot because they would think it should be.
Because they think they're going to be looked down on if they pick the other one.
Yeah.
I think. Maybe. I don't
know.
No, but the truth of the matter is that there was a fickle response to Merlot and then Pinot Noir becoming what it became. It's not like Pinot Noir did not exist prior to that. That's the strange thing. Most people are like, really? Pinot Noir was like, did you start growing it back in 2007?
You're like, it's called Burgundy, darlings.
What?
You're like, it's just some of the most expensive wine in the world,
yeah.
That's all.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. I'm going to give you three letters. And you just look this up on Google.
ERC,
yeah. Just check that.
Yeah.
What it's worth, you know. Oh, okay.
Oh, that's what that is, yeah.
Yeah. So, no, I just think that effect has been kind of accelerated, per se.
Right.
A couple times over for today.
Millennials
and wine.
That's sort of the concern is, like, will winemaking be able to keep up with changing trends? Since trends change faster than people can make wine properly.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, let me ask you a question. What have you heard about white Pinot Noir? What's your thoughts on it?
I've had plenty of good ones.
German. It's a German thing.
Yeah.
That's pretty much...
I mean, a lot of champagnes are basically like a Blanc de Noir.
Actually, like, all the ones I see are from Germany. So, I haven't tasted a lot of domestic white Pinot Noir.
Yeah, me neither.
How about you?
I don't know the point you're doing yet.
I don't know that we are.
Not really. I think, I feel like the fruit gets pretty ripe here, so it's hard to, you know, I mean, I think
it's hard to make a high acid white out of Pinot Noir.
Exactly.
Here.
It works in Germany because it's so cold.
I feel like they could do it in Oregon.
They could probably do it in Oregon,
yeah.
In Washington. But I wonder
or
if
even
it,
like
it
Santa Rita Hills, they
in
might
Washington.
Be cool enough. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I like,
I like it.
I've had it. What's your thoughts?
You know, I haven't had it yet. That's really cool. I was just curious. I'm going to ask you a question, you know, you guys, of it. And become the interviewer. You guys.
I feel like I've seen a fair amount of it in the last year or so.
Yeah.
It pops up more frequently. I mean, yeah.
Definitely at Covell, we pretty much have one at least, or a couple.
So let me ask you guys a question. Without excluding somebody, a friend of yours, or many friends of yours. And I don't want to get you guys in trouble.
Oh, we live on danger here, so.
Danger is your middle name?
Oh, yeah.
So what California wines do you guys like?
I am a huge fan.
I'm going to put the camera on you guys
now. Oh, hi. Shout out to Dragonette. I'm a member. They're in Santa Barbara. They do a lot of pretty amazing Pinot Noirs. They get, like, that great sea breeze there that cools things down. I'm a big fan of Dragonette. I like Dutcher Crossing up in Sonoma. They do some great Dry Creek Valley Zins. Those are two of my favorites. I've been drinking a lot of Cab in the last month for something I'm writing, so shout out to Vingay. They're expensive, but they're yummy. A lot of people who know me are like, really, you like that? Because they know me to like more European style. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good wine.
Yeah.
I don't know. What about you?
Some of my favorites are William Saliam from Russian River, Pinot Noir.
Mm.
It might be my favorite Pinot.
Wait, have I had it?
I don't know. We haven't had it. It's kind of expensive, too.
I haven't had it yet.
Yeah.
I must.
And then for Chardonnay and for white, Stony Brook.
Sure.
Fantastic. I love it. Big fan of that. Corson for the Napa cab version.
I haven't had any of these.
You gotta have some,
yeah.
So Corson's really good.
Do you guys know each other?
I mean, me, except for on the podcast, and I mean, I come into Covell, the wine bar he works at, but we don't, like, get together and drink casually a lot, because our lives are so busy, we just
get together. So hectic.
I mean, we should, just for funsies, drink together someday.
Well, these are all stuff, like, these are all, a lot of these wines I've gotten to try just because I'm from Northern California, so when I'm up there and I'm doing, like, wine tours or things like that, it's not like I'm popping these wines all the time.
You gotta try Dutcher Crossing.
I know, I've never had Dutcher
Crossing.
They
do a great Chardonnay, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
But I mean, I love...
How did you guys meet to do your podcast?
I frequented the bar that Sean...
She came into my bar.
I came into his bar a lot. I was studying for WSETs for blind tasting a lot. That's my excuse. I really came there frequently, but I came there a lot, and then I had this idea for a podcast. I'm like, hey, Sean, let's do a podcast. Because I also knew that he worked in comedy, and whenever we talk to each other about wine, I feel like we sort of are on the same wavelength. Yeah. So...
Quick question. Do you guys do Sean, do you do stand-up, or Ella, do you do
stand-up? No.
No stand-up. But do you do storytelling?
I do storytelling. I used to do a lot of improv and sketch, a little less now, but yeah.
Do you do stand-up?
I've done stand-up before. I hate it.
That's an interesting question. I did.
Yeah.
And in fact, I did it for a very brief moment out in California.
Oh.
I lived out in California for a while, about 30 years ago.
Oh.
And in West LA.
Okay, yeah.
Oh,
that's
wow.
A good place to do it.
Where...
Yeah, and, well,
did you ever go to the Comedy Store? Because it killed my soul just doing it twice.
No, I did it once. You guys, I'll just make it very, very quick. So
okay.
It's very short. But I was a musician. I should say I was a musician. I am a musician. Sing. But I also had played bass.
Oh, cool.
And one of my friends said, hey, you know, there is a comedy club opening up. It didn't last, by the way, but it was like in the attic of a small little, I can't call it a diner because it was tiny. It was right next to the Wiltern Theater. So to give you an example.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It was a place called the Cosmic Cafe.
Uh-huh.
I doubt it was business 30 years ago. So, but above that, in the attic, they were doing comedy. So they had people with guitars and they had people with, you know, live acts, but, it was tiny. And, they had, like, the folding chairs, the example that the people sat on.
Oh, those
and,
little theaters still exist.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's cool. But anyways, to make a long story short, they had almost like a gong show concept.
Uh-huh.
Where like, people had kind of like pots and like a wooden spoon. And if, they didn't like you, they would just like, okay... Next.
Oh,
yeah.
Ouch.
They had real comedians going up and actually performing. And I was watching. I was sitting there. I had already set up, like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes of material. And I'm watching comedians go up, and I'm like, wow, these guys are hysterical. Nobody's gonging them. This is great. And then I realized I was, like, number 4 to go up. And I go up, and I'm like, oh, wait, okay, they've been doing this for a while. This is my first time doing this. So, I had done some impressions, and I had done a few things, talking about what was going on in politics 30 years ago, like Reagan and all that. Anyway, I finished up, and I just was felt humiliated. I mean, I didn't get down, but it was just like, oh, wow, okay, I don't know if this is going to be my future. And I went up to the back, and there was one of the comedians who was watching me, and he goes, yeah, rough night, huh? He goes, well, we all have had many of those, right?
Oh, like, yeah.
Well, not, that was my first night. He goes, what? Keep doing it. I was like, really? Yeah. So, don't give up just because of that. So, anyway, so that was my, that was really technically my first real stand-up routine. And it was fun. The crazy thing is, I feel nervous walking up to the stage. But once I get up there, it's like this calm comes over you.
Yeah.
And you feel comfortable because you know what you're going to do. The audience is so you're comfortable in that feeling of, all right, you know, what's the worst that could happen? They don't laugh. All right, they don't laugh.
I don't know if there's a different answer to this question, but it kind of brings us into our main question, which is just what's bringing you some joy in your life right now, other than stand-up?
Other than stand-up and wine.
Other than stand-up and wine, yeah.
I love hosting wine tastings. Love doing them. It's my favorite thing to do.
Cool.
And it's kind of like, you know, I'll say a throwback to stand-up in the sense that you have an audience there who all want to learn about what you're talking about. And just being able to talk to them the way we're talking is very matter-of-fact, very straightforward, injecting some humor, making life just light of things, and teaching people not to be afraid or intimidated about why. And that's really what I, that really, that, you know, my family and, you know, my friends, all of them basically. And doing my work, actually, I really love what I do. To the point where I don't feel as if it's work, I don't feel as if it's a job.
Yeah.
It's like a new adventure every day. I meet new people every day. And, you know, going to restaurants and hotels. The crazy thing is, being a salesperson, if you're a salesperson, you're always a salesperson. So in your mind, it's like, I walk in there, and the person doesn't know me from that. I walk out there, and they're buying wines for me. And now we have a relationship, and it's kind of cool. And wouldn't have happened in the span of maybe however long it takes, 15, 20 minutes, half an hour of time, just having them taste wines and enjoying it, that happens. It's you know, I don't want to sound crazy, like it's magical. It's not magical, but it's kind of interesting that it happens that way. And I love it. I love the idea of not knowing what to expect. You know, the unknown. That's what makes me happy.
That's a really
That's
great
awesome.
Mindset to have for life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because life is nothing but
a lot of people
under.
Fear the unknown. It's a good idea to embrace it.
It's true.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what I always said? You know, instead of going from point A to point B to be successful, you reverse engineer. You start from B and you work way back.
Oh.
So you basically know what you want to do in life and where you want to be and what that looks like. And just imagine that and work your way backwards to today.
I love that.
I like it.
On that note, Stu, thank you so much
for
joining us.
Thank you for being our guest.
Via Skype.
Appreciate it.
If you...
We hope to have you out in LA.
Yeah,
whenever you're here.
Come
out and visit.
When I come out, you know I will contact you guys.
Please.
Yeah.
Please do.
We will have a drink.
All right, cheers.
And if you guys ever come to Miami, let me know.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, I occasionally, once in a blue moon, make it to the Palm Beach because my aunt's there, but it's been a while.
Okay.
But that's kind of far from what?
You ever make it South Beach Wine Food Festival ever?
I've never been. When is it?
Usually February.
Okay.
February?
I mean, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
I can pitch it to Delectable as a column topic. This is my new, like, goal in life is, like, get sent to places to write about them.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Same here.
We will talk to you soon. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
I just drink wine. I don't fuck with IPA. I just drink wine. I don't fuck with Minute Maid. I just drink wine. I don't fuck with Coffee Mate. I just drink wine. Give me red, white, or rosé. Don't test me, motherfucker. I'm a sommelier.
This has been a Boardwalk Audio podcast. For more information and shows, visit boardwalkaudio.com. Don't forget to rate and subscribe now.